We're talking about why kidneys are discarded in our country. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. About 37 million adults in the U.S. have chronic kidney disease. Hundreds of thousands of people have kidney failure, and they need dialysis or they need a transplant to survive. And researchers are finding that the proportion of donor kidneys procured for transplant but then discarded, that's been growing steadily in the U.S. And we're getting at your questions here, getting at the process, 800-642-1234. Are you or a family member on a waiting list for a kidney transplant? How long have you been waiting? What can you tell us about the experience? Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dr. Sumit Mohan is an associate professor of medicine epidemiology at Columbia University, and he studies the outcomes of kidney donation and he handles a clinical patient caseload. Dr. Mohan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, let's start with this recent study in the American Medical Association that compared a data set between the U.S. and France. What did that study find?
So, essentially, what the study found was they were comparing kidneys that we obtained and transplanted or did not transplant in the U.S. compared to the similar practice in France. And what they essentially found was that we are declining kidneys that are available for transplant at about twice the rate that they do in France. And we're being far more selective than perhaps than is appropriate or we should be. Resulting, as you said, in one in five kidneys in the U.S. being tossed.
So they're being tossed out, not used. And so if the U.S. matched France's usage rate of kidneys, how many additional lives could that potentially save?
So that's saving, you know, tens of thousands of lives. We're talking, you know, the math is somewhat complicated, but we're talking about 1,500 to 2,000 kidneys a year. You know, and when you talk about patient years or patient lives, we're talking about well over 100,000 patient year lives.
So let's back up a little for a moment. How are kidneys being donated and procured here in the U.S.? What is this process?
So the way this works in the United States is there are 50, the country is divided up essentially into 58 regions. Each region is called a donor service area. There's a federal contractor that is responsible for identifying potential donors, going out, speaking to families, having people donate organs. And once they've identified someone who's donating their organs, there's a national match run, essentially this process of matching this kidney to the appropriate recipient. And so what essentially happens is it's like a priority list. The kidney gets offered to the first person on the list. Their transplant center says yes or no. If they say no, they go to the second person, the third, and the fourth, and so on and so forth. Now, there are reasons why someone may say no. You know, it may not be a good match for a number of reasons. You know, so if I'm a 25-year-old patient, I may not, you know, my surgeon may not want to give me a kidney that is from a much older donor. So there are certainly some clinical characteristics that we take into consideration that makes it appropriate to say no. What I think we're finding is that everybody's saying no to certain kidneys, and we're increasingly surprised as to who and what kinds of kidneys are being, you know, we're saying no to, because these are kidneys that ought to be transplantable and can save lives.
We're talking about kidney procurement and why these kidneys are being rejected by some hospitals around the country. Dr. Sumit Mohan is an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at Columbia University, looking at the numbers. Have you lost a family member or a friend to kidney failure? Were they on a waiting list for a transplant but never got one? Have you donated one of your kidneys? How did you make that decision? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Mohan, do more donated kidneys come from deceased or living people?
So in the U.S., currently about two-thirds come from deceased donors. So last year we did a little over 20,000 kidney transplants. About 14,000, you know, give or take, were from deceased donors. About 6,000 odd were from living donors. So we clearly do more deceased donor transplants in the U.S.
And how long can a kidney survive outside the body? How soon do these transplant teams have to make a decision on what to do, or, you know, to use or reject a kidney?
So that's a good question. You know, so part of the challenge here is that it's not a long time. So the way the system works is when the transplant center gets a phone call that says, do you want a kidney for this patient that's on the wait list at your center? Transplant centers get about 60 minutes to make a decision. So they have to review the patient chart. They have to review the donor. There's a lot of information coming at them to be able to make that decision in 60 minutes. So it is a very tight timeline. And it's like that because in the event that they say no, they need to go to the next transplant center and so on. It's, you know, go down the line, essentially. Kidneys usually are transplanted in the U.S. within 16 to 18 hours after procurement. That's the average. But we have used kidneys as far out as 45, 48 hours after they're procured. But that's more the exception rather than the rule.
So in this 60-minute period, as the transplant team is deciding yes or no, is the patient involved who is on that waiting list in that decision?
So unfortunately, with 60 minutes, there isn't an opportunity to have a shared decision-making moment. That's not to say that we shouldn't have shared decision-making, but that's probably the wrong time to do it. You know, if we were having shared decision-making with the patient, the way to do it, I think, would be the way a lot of transplant centers do now is have a conversation at the time that we're adding them to the wait list, as we're working them up, getting them ready to be, quote-unquote, on the wait list, to talk about what their preferences are and, you know, what kinds of organs would they be willing to accept? You know, what's the quality of the organ they'd want, and what are they hoping to get out of this? That's one. Now, you know, what we've discovered more recently is transplant centers turn down kidneys all the time for patients. And they turn them down, essentially, we think, because what they're doing is they're hoping for a better quality kidney. And so, like most of us, I think, you know, there's a small optimism bias on the part of transplant centers that you hope that patients will get a better kidney and you say no to the one kidney today. And so what that results in is this cascade where people keep saying no, and then time goes by and before you realize it, people have bad outcomes because they're still waiting on dialysis, still waiting for this, you know, ideal kidney, so to speak, to come along when, you know, a not so great kidney would have done just as well or, you know, would have been adequate for the patient.
So you're taking a bit of a gamble to say no because that perfect kidney may never come by, may never come up.
Exactly. So that's exactly what we're finding is that in our research, what we found is essentially centers are waiting for that better kidney because they're under the scrutiny, you know, for many reasons. But one of them certainly is that there's regulatory scrutiny about how well their kidneys do. But there's also this belief that, you know, they should get the best kidney for their patients. And while that is true, they should try to get the best kidney for their patients. There's a finite supply of organs. It's a scarce opportunity. And so we should take what we can get. And patients, even with the worst quality kidneys out there that we use in the United States, the patients do much better with a poor quality kidney than they do on dialysis. And I think sometimes as professionals, we're starting to lose sight of that fact.
We're talking with Dr. Sumeet Mohan, who's a nephrologist and epidemiologist at Columbia University, specializes in kidney disease and transplant. Have you or a family member received a transplanted kidney? What was it like to get that match? Did everything go smoothly or were there medical complications? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about who gets kidney transplants and why kidneys are discarded. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Couple new studies out on kidney transplants. One found that most candidates have had multiple opportunities to receive a transplant But the kidneys on the table were declined by their transplant team and subsequently transplanted in someone lower on the wait list. So what questions do you have about kidney donation? Are you a physician or in the medical community working with patients seeking kidney transplants? What challenges do you face? 800-642-1234. Dr. Sumeet Mohan is an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at Columbia University, and he stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Kaylee is joining us from Madison. Hi, Kaylee.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What is your story with kidney donation?
I'm a live kidney donor over 3 years out now at the University of Wisconsin, where I actually used to work, so that made it really convenient for me. My kidney went to somebody that I don't know. I believe in the San Francisco area. That process is, they vet you really, really well. I mean, months and months. If anybody's thinking about it, I just wanted to say that I've had nothing but really great experiences, both with the people and physically. And I'm also a nurse, so I kind of know a little more background than, I guess, regular people, you could say. And it's really, really safe, and I feel really good about what I did. And if you're in a place to do it, it's worth looking into.
Kaylee, may I ask why you arrived at that decision? How did you arrive at the decision to donate a kidney?
I do have to say I didn't have any life commitments necessarily at that time. I was single. I was 28, 27, healthy. I had my mom teaches. She was able to take care of me over the summer for a few weeks. A lot of things did fall into place, and I was really fortunate to have a lot of support. But initially, I signed up to be a bone marrow donor and got a call very shortly after I signed up, and then that ended up falling through. I know the chances are really small of being selected for that. Working in a really big transplant center, I started to look into kidney donation instead and knew about chains, directed donor matching, stuff like that.
Well, Kaylee, thank you so much for your story. Dr. Mohan, Kaylee works very closely as a nurse in this area and found the process so reassuring as she did donate a kidney.
Right. So I must say congratulations, Kay. I think what you did clearly saved somebody's life. She's right. We are very particular about how we evaluate living donors. We have enough of an epidemic of kidney disease. We certainly don't want to add to that. So when people come forward to donate kidneys, we want to make sure they're healthy. We want to make sure that giving up a kidney is not going to adversely impact their lives. And we have enough follow-up data to show that we're actually very good at that process and being able to identify individuals who should not donate and screening them out of the process.
What medical factors determine whether that living person can donate a kidney? Kaylee said that it was a pretty rigorous process that took months.
Right. So all of us have two kidneys. Giving up one kidney is usually not a challenge if you are healthy. So if you have medical issues that might require more kidney function or might actually damage your own kidneys, most commonly diabetes or poorly controlled high blood pressure, those would rule out a donor. Those are the most common reasons. But there are also lots of things that are asymptomatic that might show up not today, but 5 years, 10 years down the line. So what the workup does essentially is an attempt to identify and uncover anything that we don't see today, but we ought to anticipate. And it's done with the intention of keeping donors as safe as possible. Like I said, because we don't want to hurt anybody in the process. But I will say that most living donors, if not all living donors, feel, this incredible sense of accomplishment when they actually are able to go through the process, save somebody's life. And, increasingly we're seeing what was just described by your caller, where people are willing to give up a kidney, not necessarily for a family member, but somebody on the wait list who just needs a kidney that they may not know themselves.
We're talking about kidney procurement and transplant teams finding the right match and why thousands of kidneys end up discarded. Dr. Sumeet Mohan researches donor kidney offers and outcomes at Columbia University. Have you or a family member received a transplant kidney? What was it like to hear about being matched? Did everything go smoothly or were there complications? Join in about your situation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Mohan, getting back to the data you studied, you examined 14 million kidney offers that were made between 2008 and 2015 to hundreds of thousands of waitlisted patients in the U.S., and that these patients had had multiple offers. Perhaps they didn't even realize that they had multiple offers for kidneys. When a transplant team skips a person on the wait list and skips them again and again and again, what are the chances? I mean, will that person survive?
So, you know, what we found was somewhat troubling. So I will start out with saying that most transplant centers all transplant centers, I should say, are trying to do the right thing for their patients, right? So the goal here is I have a patient who needs a kidney. My goal is to get them the best kidney, or at least get them the kidney that would work for them. While sometimes we do say no for when a patient gets an offer, I think what we found troubling in the data was they got so many offers declined for them that they eventually went on to die. So in our cohort of, you know, when we looked at that 7-year period, we looked at everybody who was on the wait list at the time, you know, about 10% of patients who had had at least one offer unfortunately died before they got transplanted. Another 30% of that group were removed from the waitlist, presumably because they were too sick at that point to be transplanted. You know, so that's a lot of people. Now, with the caveat that one kidney can only save one person, what this does is it does two things. It introduces a certain amount of subjectivity into the system, you know, what is otherwise an objective allocation system. And so that creates some challenges in trying to understand why. The other thing that we're seeing is that we're becoming increasingly selective in the donors that we're willing to use. So in 2018 alone, we threw away well over 3,000 kidneys, 3,500 kidneys. And what our research shows is that about half, if not more, of those kidneys were definitely transplantable and in a different country would probably have been transplanted successfully. Suggesting that we have to relook at our allocation system and the processes that we use, and perhaps, you know, find ways to engage patients in this decision-making process, even though it is quite rushed.
Going back to the study on the U.S. and France, found that France had a higher acceptance rate of kidneys from older donors. How does age factor into kidney donation?
So, you know, as far as your kidneys are concerned, they peak somewhere between the ages of 25 and 40. And from there on, we all lose a small amount of kidney function every year as a part of normal aging process. So a kidney from a 25-year-old donor, you know, say an unfortunate individual who dies in a car accident at age 25, if they were to donate their kidneys, the quality of those kidneys would be much, much better than somebody who has used their kidneys and dies when they're in their 60s or 70s. So because the quality of the kidneys are better when they are younger, there's less scarring, they tend to function better. You know, if you had a choice, you would always pick a younger donor. The challenge is, you know, we don't have a lot of younger donors, which is probably a good thing. And so we have to make do with the donors that we do have and the kidneys that we do get. And that's essentially what places like France are doing. So over the last 15 years, the average age of the donor and the average quality of the donor that has been transplanted in France has, you know, slowly gotten worse. But they've managed to continue to do well enough for their patients.
Oh, the patient outcomes haven't suffered with aging kidneys being transplanted.
They have not. And so, you know, clearly we have, as medications have gotten better and our ability to understand the immune system has gotten better, we have been able to take better care for patients and outcomes have gotten better. And so we should be willing to use what I would term less than ideal donor organs. And in the U.S., unfortunately, we haven't seen that same trend. We have stayed relatively stable in terms of the quality of the kidneys that we're using over the last 15 years. And that has led to an increasing number of kidneys being turned away.
We're talking about the complexities around kidney procurement and why thousands of kidneys are thrown out in the U.S. Columbia University nephrologist and epidemiologist Sumeet Mohan is our guide, and he researches where donor kidneys end up. Should the U.S. take a more aggressive stance with donated kidneys? Should our hospitals be using more kidneys rather than throwing them away? What do you think about taking more risks with the matches? Join in with your ideas, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Coming up, our conversation about kidney donation continues. We'll maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about a study published recently in JAMA Internal Medicine. It found the U.S. throws away at least 3,500 donated kidneys every year. So we're looking at the processes, the regulatory processes, the view from hospitals and transplant centers that want to find that perfect match in very few hours, limited time, maybe even minutes. Would you accept a donated kidney that required you to also receive another medical treatment after that procedure? Have you ever received dialysis? What can you tell us about that? Join in through the hour, 800-642-1234. Dr. Sumeet Mohan stays with us through the hour. He's an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at Columbia University in New York. Dr. Mohan, there was this recent executive order directing the Secretary of Health and Human Services to improve our country's use of more deceased donor kidneys. What is going on at the federal level here?
So that was a reasonably comprehensive executive order that looked at both dialysis and transplant and how we provide care. So the goal is to try to understand why we're discarding kidneys. So, you know, we've talked about quality of organs and whether we're just being too picky, and that's certainly part of the problem. There was some concern that the regulatory thresholds for how well a kidney needed to do or how well patients needed to do after the procedure was a bar that was set too high. So just to provide some context, the average mortality rate for dialysis patients is about 20% per year. And the five-year survival rate for patients on dialysis in the United States is just under 40%.
Wow. Right?
So that means 4 out of 10 people are going to live 5 years once they start dialysis. That's worse than most cancers today. So it's not a good outcome. That needle has not moved much either over the last couple of decades. And so I think the renewed focus on kidney health, understanding how we can improve the technologies we provide dialysis, improve our understanding of transplantation, and try to use more of the organs that we're getting is the right way to do it. So there have been some regulatory changes around the one-year thresholds that we're expected to meet. You know, and to provide context around the quality of kidneys that we're talking about, you know, one of the systems in the U.S. ranks the kidneys in terms of quality from 1% to 99th percent.
Right, these are like star ratings. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, kind of. So if the first percentile kidneys are the best quality kidneys, the 99th are the worst quality kidneys procured for that year or the preceding year. And so, you know, understandably, when a transplant center gets called and they said, well, this is a 90% or a 95% kidney, you know, there is obviously a certain amount of reluctance to use that because there's this desire to get a better kidney for their patients. What I think people sometimes lose sight of the fact is that even the worst kidneys that we get you know, the so-called low-quality kidneys, still do much better for patients than if you had left them on dialysis.
Well, let's look for a moment on what the hospitals might be thinking here. Are they more risk averse? I mean, you know, there is more risk when you're not finding that perfect match. Does it mean like there's more time on the operating table, time to wake up a kidney? Perhaps a person would have a longer hospital stay. What are the costs involved with taking more risk?
So there are two sets of costs. So one, of course, is the financial costs and the complication costs. So yes, the lower the quality of the kidney, the longer it's been sitting in a bucket of ice, the more work is required to make sure that it works. Patients tend to stay longer in the hospital. They may need dialysis even after the the procedure. So there is more that happens, and they tend to cost more to transplant. Hospitals are also, because of the way the centers are compared and rated, you know, if you don't have the best outcomes because you're willing to use not so great kidneys, even though your patients may be doing well, your star rating starts to decrease. So, you know, the way that the transplant centers are rated can be quite punitive in some ways. So there is an ongoing effort to change some of that punitive structure right now. In fact, some of those regulations just got withdrawn last week. So that's certainly a cost. You know, the reason, however, that a lot of us are skeptical about the fact that it's only the regulatory burden that has been driving this, or only organ quality, is we've also had other things that seem to make little or no sense. So, for example, the discard rate for kidneys goes up on the weekends. So more kidneys that are procured or made available on a Friday or a Saturday tend to find their way to the discard pile than kidneys that are procured on a Monday or a Tuesday, right?
Wow.
It's hard to
Why?
Imagine that has anything to do. That's a good question. The challenge, unfortunately, is because of the way the data is captured currently, and the fact that those data systems have not been updated in, you know, in years, we don't have enough data to fully understand why that is happening. But what I think we can confidently say is that is unlikely to be quality related. In fact, the quality of the kidneys that we get on Friday and Saturday on average are better. And after you do adjust for the quality of the kidney, the discard rates on the weekend are definitely still higher. The number of times a kidney that is available on a Friday or Saturday gets turned down also increases. So you have to go deeper and lower down on the priority list before you get them. You know, all of which suggests that, you know, the allocation system probably needs a closer look. You know, we need to have more transparency in the decision-making process, and we probably need to engage patients more effectively in that process.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Sumeet Mohan, who's an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at Columbia in New York. Should the U.S. adopt a more aggressive approach with donated kidneys? Have you lost a family member or a friend to kidney failure? Were they waiting for a transplant and never got one? Join in the conversation with your story, your questions, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Mohan, take us into conversations you have with patients. Take us into the clinical setting, if you will. How would patients feel if they are given lower quality kidneys or kidneys with more risk of infecting them with perhaps new diseases? Are they willing to take the risk? What are those conversations like?
So, no, I will say that the conversations that we have when patients come in to be evaluated as candidates is nobody actually ever wants to know about the quality of the kidney, right? The question everybody asks is, when am I getting my kidney, right? It's not what's the quality of the kidney I'm going to get, or, right? Some of the discussion around quality is broad and you know, once it starts to get nuanced, there's a certain amount of inherent trust, I think, in the medical system that, you know, I don't fully understand this, but I figure when I have the right match and you think I have a kidney that's appropriate for me, you're going to pick one. So because it is a complex decision, it's by no means a simple decision. Having said that, I think we do have discussions about the quality of the kidneys that people will get, what's available. And we want to try to create realistic expectations. There's also an effort to try to use as many of the kidneys as possible. So some transplant centers are certainly more aggressive than others. So, for example, more recently, with the unfortunate opioid epidemic, there have been a lot of deaths of individuals who have had hepatitis C. And traditionally, hepatitis C was not a curable disease, and kidneys from patients with hepatitis C largely went unused, right? They might go to somebody who already is on dialysis and has hepatitis C, but outside of that, they were unusable. But that has changed over the last couple of years with new onset, new treatments being available that can cure hepatitis C, essentially. So having made that a curable disease, transplant centers are, you know, becoming innovative, and they're trying to use these kidneys for people who don't have hepatitis C, understanding that we could treat the hepatitis C after the transplant, cure them of it, and have successfully have used an organ that would have historically gone into the trash. So we are trying to push the envelope. I think transplant centers are trying to understand that there is an urgent need out there.
Does the patient have any idea whether they are going to a transplant center that is perhaps more aggressive about using kidneys or one that is lesser? I mean, do they have any transparency in that?
So yes and no. So there is a lot of this data is publicly available. So there is a scientific registry for transplant recipients. They have a website. It's called srtr.org. Where they put up a lot of information about transplant centers. Some of that information, unfortunately, is, I think, too complex for the average patient. Even as an epidemiologist, I will tell you that some of the reports I struggle with myself. So I would imagine that I wouldn't be surprised that patients find it overwhelming and just, you know, hard to navigate. They have made some efforts in trying to create more patient-friendly web pages, try to share some information. Are we there in terms of creating patient-friendly, simple-to-navigate websites that allow them to identify where they ought to go? No, we're not there yet, but hopefully we'll be there soon.
We're looking at kidney donation outcomes after two new studies in JAMA found people who need kidney donations are not getting them. Columbia University nephrologist and epidemiologist Sumit Mohan stays with us. He's author of one of those studies. Would you accept a donated kidney that required you to perhaps also receive another medical treatment after the procedure? Have you received dialysis? What can you tell about dialysis? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick this up in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the thousands of kidneys that are discarded in our country each year. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Kidney disease kills right around 5,000 Americans on the kidney waiting list each year. And some researchers point to hospitals being risk-averse. They don't want to accept perhaps lower quality kidneys. Transplant centers also have to decide whether to refuse a kidney within minutes. There's the quality control. There's the race against the clock. So what do you think in all of this? Should the U.S. adopt a more aggressive approach with donated kidneys? Should we be using more kidneys instead of refusing them? Still time for your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Columbia University nephrologist and epidemiologist Sumit Mohan stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Owen joining us from Waiwiga. Hi, Owen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call this morning. I guess I had one point and then one question. My first point is, you know, the occupation I'm in requires 7 days of work every week. You know, there's no day off, and it's hard to find staffing on the weekends. So one would assume potentially that's a risk with the kidney discard rate on the weekends. There's less surgeons that are interested in doing the work because they're at their lake house or whatever. The second question is this. So if a young person dies on the weekend and they're, or even during the week, and they're under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and they have a high toxicology screen, say an overdose death or a vehicle accident where they've become, you know, severely impaired, is that a rejection, or is the kidney still considered viable for use?
Dr. Mohan, what about toxicology and, you know, under the influence at the moment, you know, upon death?
So, you know, the organizations that are responsible for helping us procure organs or and, you know, approach deceased donors have a complex and I'd say very thorough system of screening. So there are certainly some things that would not impact organ quality at all. So, for example, if somebody is under the influence of alcohol and in a car accident, that would not preclude them from being an organ donor. It depends also on what toxicology we're talking about, but they are screened. You know, we also do a lot of rapid testing for infectious diseases, for substances that we don't want exposed to. And there are also other measures that frequently happen in terms of assessing both the donors and the risks. They're, you know, it's rare for people to die immediately and become organ donors after something like a car accident and things like that. Those are usually, they're at least stabilized in the hospital, and only after life-saving efforts have failed does that question start to come about. But it is a complex of a very rapid but complex and carefully choreographed dance to identify these donors and try to get them to agree to donate.
Dr. Mohan, we've had transplant conversations on our show before. We know that these transplant teams, they're operating around the clock. They're flying to places. They are taking risks as well, flying in the middle of the night to procure various organs. With your notion about weekends, is it a staffing level at all?
So that's a good question, and that, you know, obviously becomes the first default suspicion when you look at the data and say, wait a minute, is that what's happening here? While that is, you know, potentially part of the story, what we're talking about is, you know, multiple transplant centers are, you know, we have 250 kidney transplant centers in the country. And essentially what, when we throw a kidney, what we're saying is nobody thought that kidney was usable. So while you're right that, you know, at smaller hospitals and smaller transplant programs, there may be resource crunches and resource limitations on the weekend that, you know, that may preclude them from being able to perform a transplant. I don't think that's true at the larger transplant centers where we tend to have multiple surgeons and multiple teams and people going on call and off call. You know, so in, at least in our preliminary work looking at this, it does not appear to be a resource utilization issue, but it also, you know, but it's a good thought and something that we're trying to understand better.
Let's bring in Saul now joining us from Stevens Point. Good morning, Saul.
Hi, good morning. I had a sort of two questions related. One is how many of these patients are type 2 diabetic? And secondly, what kind of compliance do you see after the transplant?
Saul, thanks so much for those questions. Dr. Mohan?
So about half of, nearly half of all patients with end-stage kidney disease in the United States are diabetic, and their kidney disease is attributed to their diabetes. The percentage of people on the wait list who have diabetes is a little bit lower, but it's still quite high. It's about a third of the wait list is have diabetes, but that's a mixture of both type 1 and type 2. And the second question was compliance, right? So, you know, part of the evaluation process, for, honestly, is, you know, is this somebody who's going to understand the complexities of the immunosuppression that happens after the transplant, and is this something that we can help them with and have them succeed? Does that mean that everybody's 100% compliant all the time? No. But it does not mean that we don't try to ensure compliance and try to create the systems necessary to support that compliance, because this is, you know, transplant is not a cure. It's a treatment choice. And that does mean that you have to take medications for the rest of your life.
What do the symptoms of kidney failure look like? What do those later symptoms entail?
So this is the real challenge, right? So, you know, part of the reason that kidney disease has become this silent epidemic where one in eight or nine adults in the United States has kidney disease and, you know, the vast majority of people don't know it, is early on there are essentially no symptoms. When you do have symptoms, most of them are reasonably nonspecific. It's decreasing appetite, it's fatigue, things that you would attribute, you could easily attribute to a number of other reasons for you being tired or having not a great appetite. And so people tend to overlook this. So most people in the United States continue to be identified as having kidney disease relatively late in the process, at a point where it's very hard to slow down progression. And, you know, which explains why we now have about 120,000 people per year developing end-stage renal disease and 500,000 people on dialysis alone.
For years, researchers have also been looking to extend a kidney's viability through cold storage because it's just such crunch time after harvesting that kidney. Are you seeing any promising developments on that front?
So you're right. So organ preservation has been a huge challenge. You know, regeneration of organs or improving the quality of organs after they've been procured. And there is there are multiple groups doing some really fascinating work around how to store these organs in a way that their viability would be much longer than just the 48 hours or so that we're looking at. There are perfusion pumps. There are new solutions. There are lots of medications now that are in the pipeline, so to speak, in the drug discovery pipeline that we are studying to try to see if there are ways to reduce the inflammation that occurs at the time of death, to try to see if we can stop that process of organ damage and make these organs more viable.
If you could work on one thing tomorrow that could really change the course for how the kidney process works in our country, what would that be? What would you change?
So there are already ongoing efforts currently that are attempting to change the allocation process. So one thing that is that's being looked at closely is the way kidneys are allocated geographically. So they currently look allocated first within these donation service areas, of which we have 58. Once we go, nobody in that area wants a kidney, it then goes out to the U.S. region. So there are 11 regions, usually consisting of three or four states. And then only after that is it offered nationally. So there's a certain amount of time lost in that process. But more concerning in some ways is it creates a significant geographic disparity. So where you live determines how easy or difficult it is to get a transplant. There are parts of the country where you can get a transplant within a year, and some parts of the country where the wait time is between 5 and 7 years.
Dr. Mohan, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Sumeet Mohan is an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at Columbia University in New York. This conversation comes to you on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cherkent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.